I'm Declan Burke, and welcome to The Sit Down, the podcast that explores the mindsets, motivations, and opinions of the brands, agencies, rights holders, and elite talent working with Sport Endorse. Today's guest, Jack Kenny Herbert, is Director of Sponsorship for Sidley, a multidisciplinary creative agency designing culture-driven communications and experiences on a global scale. Jack talks to me about his 10-plus years of working in and around sport, some awesome campaigns, what he thinks is essential for successful sports sponsorships, his aspirations for 2023, and the fact that the CEO of Sidley in London is a true sports fan. Given that Sidley is ultimately owned by Hakuhodo DY Holdings, tanoshinde kudasai, or simply, enjoy. Hi Jack, how are you? Thank you very much for joining us on the Sit Down with Sport Endorse today.
Thanks for having me on.
So, to get started, the first question is always, where do you come from?
Well, born in London, grew up in the countryside, but now gladly back in London.
Excellent stuff. So have you participated much in sport yourself, or do you still participate?
Like a lot of people, I played quite a lot of sport at school. Given the industry I work in, I clearly love sport, but now tend to the easily accessible ones in London, so tennis and golf, really.
So tell us a little bit about your role in Sidley at the moment.
Sure. So I'm Director of Sponsorship here in London, started a few months ago. Put simply, my main responsibility is to both to advise our existing clients how best to maximize their sponsorship deals, because as you'll know, so many brands don't properly execute their sponsorship campaigns. There are loads of rights that go unused, or they negotiate rights packages that aren't best suited to their KPIs. Also, another key part of my role is I lead on partner search and acquisition, so putting brands and ambassadors or rights holders together. At Sidley, we're actually owned by Hakuhodo Holdings, one of the biggest agencies in the world, I think number 9, and they're headquartered out in Tokyo, but we work very closely with them. And one thing we're really working on or focusing on at the moment is exploring how we can bring more Japanese brands back into European sport. You might remember back in the 90s or early noughties that there was a real relationship. Just looking at the Premier League, you had the likes of JVC and Sharp, lots of big Japanese brands, front of shirt, and they've sort of pulled back in recent years. And we know there's an indication or an appetite in Japan to dip their toe. And, you know, many brands already do, but dip toe back into European waters. So really exploring that at the moment.
I noticed from your career profile that at one point you were dealing with celebrity ambassadors. I had the privilege of living in Tokyo from 1995 to 2006. And certainly in the early to mid 90s, there were a lot of TV commercials in Japan, which would have used famous Hollywood actors primarily as kind of the ambassadors within the commercials. It's become more mainstream now, but certainly in the late 80s to mid 90s, it was less prevalent.
Yeah, Tokyo is a great but mental city as well.
Yeah, it's a bit crazy. And of course, from a sports perspective, sure, haven't they hosted a Rugby World Cup and an Olympics recently? So the way in which they can execute a project is second to none, really.
Definitely.
So you advise the client roster basically around sponsorship and athletes and so on. So I know you're only in the door, so I won't push you too hard on this, but in terms of recent work that has happened with Sidley, with sports or athletes, have you a couple of examples which you think are good?
Yeah, I mean, it was actually before I started, but I know it's still ongoing, but a big client of ours is Oppo. I'm sure you'll know, but they're a big Chinese electronics company, mobile phones in particular. And they've got a Champions League partnership, and we recruited Kaká to sort of front their campaign and basically created and released an end-to-end campaign leveraging Kaká and their European sponsorship to create a fully integrated campaign. So that's what we were very proud of. Also, we are delighted to be working with Lidl. That was a relatively recent business win, I think in the last 6 months or so, but they've got a massive deal with UEFA and with a tournament next year. Yeah, deep in planning mode at the moment, but lots of exciting things. We don't just work in football though, open to everything, but I guess in terms of our most recent work, where our focus lies.
I actually saw the Kaká campaign, or the Oppo Kaká campaign, I guess. I thought it was really cool. So exciting, certainly, to be operating at that top level.
Definitely.
So in the 10 plus years that you've been dealing in sports marketing and working with sports rights holders and athletes and brands, what do you think have been a couple of the most satisfactory collaborations you've worked on?
What springs to mind was, and this was at my previous job at CSM, I was part of a team which brought Shaw into football, and that's been a fantastic collaboration. I think if you're a football fan and you watch football in the UK, the data shows us that you're no doubt aware of Shaw. For years, we've worked on numerous deals between Shaw and Man City, Chelsea, Southampton, Everton, Wolves, Crystal Palace, media deals with Sky, and then creating a suite of assets. So that was obviously the deal side, but then the activation side as well. Worked on numerous campaigns across multiple touch points, creating above the line TV ads, big innovative digital out of home campaigns to just your standard below the line social. So I think from like a personal perspective, what a great collaboration to work on and to hone my skills really over the last 7 years or so. But I think in terms of like business success, the brief originally to us was to target 18 to 35 males in the UK, and what better platform than football? And then the results we saw and the sales uplift were fantastic. Within each of those deals, we had access to multiple talent. We had a long-standing ambassador deal with Mason Mount. You might have seen him on TV, various Shaw ads over the years. He's now obviously moved to Man United. I've since left the team, so I imagine they are dealing with that at the moment. But yeah, that was a great collaboration in my opinion.
Wow, what a long collaboration as well. I mean, that clearly illustrates how successful it was, because as we'll all be aware, if sponsorship isn't working, it can get cut quite quickly. So the fact that that has continued over such a period of time is testimony to the great work you've done.
Yeah.
In terms of sports marketing in a global context, how important do you think that continuing collaboration between the three parties, let's say business, elite talent, and rights holders, is going to be over the next 12 to 24 months? Do you think it's going to grow, or do you think it might regress a little bit? What's your view?
I think part of that question might be best asking an economics advisor, because as we know, the sponsorship industry is beholden to the economy really and how businesses are doing, and should there be a recession, people tend to cut back on that sort of expenditure. But economy aside, if you look in the case of elite athletes, I think there's huge opportunity for the next year or two. As you'll know, some brands favour an athlete-only sponsorship rather than a rights holder deal. And say if you wanted to either do a deal with Arsenal, or if you wanted to do an individual deal with Gabriel Martinelli, the Martinelli deal is going to be cheaper. And also brands can be way more flexible with an ambassador versus a rights holder deal. They can use individual IP through the line. There's no concerns about three player rule and equal prominence. They can also select athletes whose values align perfectly to the brand, ensuring a really good fit. But that's not to say that I don't think there's massive rights holder partnership opportunities. Of course there are. I mean, the gravitas of being partnered up with an elite level sports outfit is invaluable, really. And the strength of big sports brands' IPs, like a Man United logo or the Olympic rings, does so much to help grow your business.
Absolutely, yeah. That will be our experience as well from what we've seen in terms of brands dealing with athletes directly, as distinct from via rights holders, that there tends to be a bit more flexibility there.
Yeah.
But then it is, of course, only leveraging the brand profile of that individual player, so to speak.
Of course, and it's harder to fully flesh out a campaign with an individual ambassador deal versus a rights holder deal. I think at Sidley and throughout my career, try and advise would be a rights holder deal topped up with an ambassador on top. And more now we see that a lot of players, their commercial IP is owned or managed by the club they're contracted to, and that's why they're paid such exorbitant wages, because it covers their commercial. So that way you get the best of both worlds, a sort of wide-ranging rights holder partnership, but with the ability to create, for example, TV ads with just a single ambassador or that sort of thing.
Another thing that just popped into my head around that would be, if you go the rights holder route and you have a few then potential ambassadors, it means in the unfortunate event that something perhaps slightly unsavory happens with one of those ambassadors, you're hedging your risk to a degree because it's not all on the one person.
Of course, yeah. I've definitely sat in a few meetings discussing big campaigns and what happens if so-and-so gets injured or so-and-so doesn't make the cut. But yeah, always risk, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's going back a while now, around the time where Dean Asher-Smith would have been coming to prominence and doing very well in the European Championships. So maybe that was 2019.
Yeah.
There was an Irish athlete who Mueller Yogurt were doing some work with, Brian Gregan. Very nice guy. And unfortunately, he got injured. So he wasn't able to participate in the 2019 Europeans at the end. So they pivoted and they had Brian in supermarkets doing yogurt tasting with people and talking about the European Championships as
they were on.
Sometimes injury isn't the disaster that you think it might be, but yeah, it requires a bit of creative thinking and a pivot.
Of course.
In Sport Norse, we're believers in technology. If you look at the influencing market online, it seems to be growing, and that's all about tech primarily. So in what ways do you see technology playing a role in collaborations between sport and business over the next while?
Technology seems to come on so quickly every few months, but over the last couple of years, there was a big focus on the metaverse, but fortunately, in my opinion, that seems to have died down. I think, personally, I'd always hoped that people would still value real-life experiences over virtual metaverse experience, and that seems to be the case at the moment. I think perhaps there was a bit of a boom as we came out of lockdown, and a lot of people had spent an awful amount of time online. However, you can't overlook this. And I think as the tech continues to develop, there's clearly so many opportunities there in the future. But I think the most pertinent tech, and if you look more specifically at what I do, so sports sponsorship, is AI. You know, by no means an expert, I'm not at all, but it seems to develop so rapidly. And I imagine in the future, we might see AI as a more and more prominent tool when trying to match brands and rights holders or when searching for talent to front up a campaign. I think this is an area where the tech could save people a lot of time.
I completely agree with that. We actually have something under development at the moment ourselves, which will rate athletes from a marketability perspective. It looks at obviously proprietary data off our platform. So it's focused primarily on talent that's on our platform, but it also looks at obviously social media reach, activation kind of capabilities, prominence in the news, whether that's good or bad, and a whole bunch of other factors. So in a football context, if they're playing in the Premiership, are they on a top tier team, mid tier, bottom tier, Champions League places, international caps, like a whole bunch of weighting factors. It's fascinating when you start delving into it, actually. Of course, it's one of those things where you can go deep and deep and deep into the data, spend a lot of time on it, but then at the end of the day, how much value are actually deriving from it? So that tends to link back, I suppose, to the size of the budget that people are considering spending. Yeah. And for reference, I and Sport Endorse as well completely concur with the fact that we believe in humanity and therefore human interaction being important. If we take kids as an example, if you have a kid who meets one of their sporting heroes in the flesh, even if it's only for a couple of minutes, that has far greater impact than them seeing a little video of the person saying something.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, I understand the growing industry and the focus on esports and the metaverse, but personally, yeah, I definitely prefer the real life interactions.
So then it's a slight shift, but what do you think businesses can learn from the way that sports teams collaborate with each other and athletes? A little unfair me asking that because clearly I talk to a lot of athletes and businesses. I have some examples of how it doesn't work actually and some how it does work. But in the context of your career to date, have you seen anything that you think would be useful?
Yeah. Long gone are the days where a brand might create an ad and then hire an ambassador of loads of followers just to push the advert out because that doesn't work anymore. And I think, like most people, I spend too much time on Twitter or TikTok passing the time. But increasingly, you notice rights holders, the content they put out, it's not stylized, it's not polished, it's authentic, often shot handheld, behind the scenes content with their players, offering some sort of unique insight. You know, it's content that you might not get elsewhere. And I think that's the main lesson. And brands are trying to mimic this and should continue to do so. But that's the main learning for me, really, if you look at how rights holders leverage their talent versus brands. It's the authenticity and insight, really.
Yeah, that's encouraging for me to hear as well, because I agree, authenticity is an absolutely key word. And I think that unfortunately becomes a bit of a differentiator, particularly in the world where so much social doesn't have that. One of my questions was to do with risks that businesses should be aware of when collaborating with athletes or rights holders and how to mitigate those risks. We touched on that a little bit earlier, but if you had a top three things to consider, what would they be?
I think, like anything, there's always risk, right? It's impossible to accurately predict what exactly is going to happen. We've seen so many examples of stories coming out in the media or people making highly inappropriate comments, which has brought disrepute to the rights holder or governing body that they work for. But public image has always got to be the number one. How is the brand of, say, Manchester United, how is that perceived globally and locally? Then I think you need to look at the association with the sports and the rights holder, like the fans, how do they behave? Is there any causes for concern? And then I'd probably want to look at those directly involved in the club. Are there players that you don't necessarily want to be associated? If we look at football, or, you know, any sport actually, there's often players who have quite outspoken beliefs and values that brands probably don't want to align themselves to. And as with any big business deal, there's various clauses inserted into contracts where partnerships can be terminated when contentious moments occur. So I think, like anything, proper and detailed analysis ahead of any deals will help mitigate any risks. And that's actually one thing that we're working on at Sidley. We're building a bespoke evaluation tool to work with brands to properly ascertain where they should invest in European sports properties. And one of the steps that we do is a detailed risk assessment when we look into this, and we try and predict how much risk they're taking on by partnering up with, say, a UFC or, say, the Rugby Premier League, for example.
I'm sure all guests listening to the podcast will have an interest in that as well. So Jack will be available should you have any questions at a later date. If we skip on to content, I mean, around activating a sponsorship, getting the deal done so you've got the rights secured with the rights holder and then a number of players, but you've got to go activate that sponsorship. So how important is content?
Vital, really. Many brands who spend a fortune on their partnerships, but treat it as a badging exercise. They're happy to sit back, watch the LED roll around the pitch, and that's it for them. But that's really not enough, is it? There's so many rights tied into these contracts, and brands really must be making use of them. If you just look at content creation, social media channels, those are the best way for brands to interact directly with their fans or consumers. And you have various social posts and content creation rights included in these contracts, so why not maximize them? You have talent appearances. So what the fans or consumers really want to see is their heroes rather than sort of functional product adverts. The idea really is you need to create content which will actually engage fans and ambassadors want to share on their channels, and the clubs are fully engaged in. And that way you have a happy medium between all parties.
Sounds perfectly rational to me. My next one, I'm actually going to enjoy asking, particularly because earlier in our conversation, you talked about introducing a brand to football and it lasting and still ongoing over 7 years. The question is, how long do you think an optimum collaboration or partnership lasts, or is there an optimum length?
I think it's hard to put an exact number on it, but long-term partnerships are always ideal. How else can you build real association with a rights holder and continued engagement with a fan base? And I think if you look at some of the most successful partnerships, they're all very long term. Look at P&G with the Olympics. They sort of launched their brand purpose, didn't they, with the Thank You Mum campaign, and they've been going ever since and have just gone from strength to strength from a business perspective, working agency side. Naturally, you want your clients to commit long term to a rights holder or to a particular sport and stay with them through the journey and create multiple campaigns, renew deals, perhaps build their sponsorship portfolio. Very exciting.
I think that's another thing which we've seen if the brand really wants to get proper value, and the same from the athlete perspective, we would generally consider a minimum of a year. And even then, it depends on, I guess, the tier of the athlete. But you really need to try and invest for people to get to know each other properly. And once they know each other properly, there's a greater trust built, and then everything just runs much more smoothly and the outcome is much better.
Definitely.
So you have a lot of experience. So what industries do you think have worked well with sport in your career to date? Or do you think any industry can work well with sport?
Good question. I think it's quite difficult to identify particular industries that work with sport in general, because sport is so wide. There's so many different sports and so many different audiences associated with each. But there are some very clear synergies. For a while, Specsavers had a deal with the County Championship. And why was that great? Because who watched a County Championship midweek on those four-day games? It was basically people who are retired. And who are more likely to buy glasses from Specsavers? People are a bit older and their eyesight is going.
Okay, that makes good sense to me as well. So the next one provokes many different reactions, but do you think sport transcends cultures and as a result is helpful as a conduit for a brand to deliver its message to a targeted audience?
Short answer, definitely. Yeah, I've already touched upon it earlier, but look at P&G and their Olympics partnership. They basically use the Olympics as a global platform to launch, you know, a message for good, and we're very successful doing so. And more and more, and I've read loads of articles and seen various campaigns that CSR is increasingly important at the heart of sports sponsorship campaigns.
Yep, I agree completely. At its base, sport is something which people all over the world can participate in, right? Particularly football, which has featured a lot so far because it's such a difficult game to play, but an easy game to play. All you need is a ball, yeah.
I think it also depends on what that message is that everyone's happy with a good, meaningful, community-driven message, perhaps. But I think often we see sports perhaps used too politically in a negative way. So I think fans are increasingly cynical to that sort of thing.
I agree completely. And so we've touched on bits of this as well, so it's kind of a wrap-up around it. But I mean, best practice from a sponsorship perspective today. So how do you measure ROI? And should the ROI be simply financial, or should there be social, environmental KPIs, etc. included?
So hard to answer that question, but I think annoyingly I'd say it depends a lot on the partner's ambition. Some partners, they just want to sell more product. Sales uplift is the best indicator. But typically partners aren't quite so single-minded, so we'd always try and work on a range of KPIs to help determine success. But as mentioned, switching more to the front end, we're working on a tool which helps determine expected ROI ahead of investment in a partnership. And this is something we're going to be launching quite soon. But here we look at estimated sales uplift based on various data points that we have. Also, there's the media value, which many brands find important. But I think what's really important is evaluating partnerships after year on year, work with the rights holders, the data, brand power surveys. There's so much you can analyze these days to really show the success of a partnership and how it affects a brand's market position, their sales, and the brand image or the public perception of said brand.
Absolutely. Again, coming back to data and how important it is, accurate data. And it's a competitive market. And that's why we're lucky to have guys like you, Jack, to help us understand this stuff. I'm good at asking questions, but solving them is a bit of a different challenge. So moving on, I guess, to top three moments, but top three moments in terms of sport in your career to date. So, right, so we're 10 plus years. If you're to pick three moments in relation to sport that you've been involved with, what are they?
One big moment was, as I've talked about earlier, is working on Shore and football. From a business perspective, multiple successful deals and activations, but from a personal level, really helped me hone my partnership acumen, given the various rights holders and ambassadors we work with and dealt with, and then the actual activations themselves, and getting a real deep understanding of what goes into sports partnerships and what rights are involved and how best to activate. So that's been very important to me, I think. also, when I was starting out, I worked with the NBA. Clearly, there were big spikes around the European Games in London, London Global Games, Istanbul. And I think just working with such a massive organisation, globally recognised franchises and players, it was just an awesome experience. It was a fantastic way to wet my teeth in the sports industry. And then third, I think just getting into the industry itself. It's quite a tricky one to get into. A lot of people, myself included, think, oh, I like sport, maybe I'll try working it. And, you know, I had to try a few different avenues. So I was just quite buzzing to get my foot in the door eventually and talk about topics I was passionate about in the first few meetings. I remember sat there in the first meeting about football and I was like, wow, this is so cool. Clearly the novelty has now worn off. But yeah, I think those are probably three moments for me.
It's funny that bit about getting into the industry. It is challenging to get the door open and to get a foothold and to work your way up through it. And in actually a previous podcast with Lorna Danaher, the sponsorship manager for Energia here in Ireland, she was waxing so lyrically about how great it is once you're in. I think she single-handedly probably doubled or trebled the number of applicants for every sponsorship manager role in the country now.
Really? She should work in PR.
Absolutely. And I guess, so most lives have positive moments, but occasionally there's the odd challenge as well. And maybe it's linked to the getting into the industry. But what do you think has been the biggest challenge you've faced so far professionally?
I think just the pandemic, really. For me, in my previous role, took on a lot more work with many people furloughed alongside pay cuts to help keep the business afloat without much to release, you know, outside of work because you just sort of close your laptop and then you're just at home. But I think I managed that by knowing what I was experienced was a drop in the ocean compared to what some poor people endured during that time. So, but I think, yeah, I found it quite challenging, but everyone did. So I don't think it was in any way more difficult for me than it was for anyone else. I'm sure it was probably less, but that was definitely the most challenging part of my career, I think.
I have one of these brains which once it's done, I kind of forget about it and I focus on the now and the future, occasionally looking back on the past. So I've mentally moved on from it, but you're absolutely right. It had an impact and it had a very strong impact, not just in the moment or in the 2+ years approximately, but it continues to have a bit of a legacy impact in lots of people and mindsets. So not to be forgotten, to be remembered. So moving on to fun. So
yeah,
you've met lots of people involved with sport, rights holders, athletes, etc. Who do you think is the biggest joker or the best joker who you've met?
I worked at a pretty fun desk in my first sports job at Pitch. Still have a lot of fun working now, but I think I'm sure you found it the same when you're first starting out at work. You're sort of fresh out of uni, there's not as much pressure and there's lots of fun to be had and there's loads of you in the same boat, but then the funnel sort of narrows as you progress in your career. But in terms of jokers, worked a couple of times with Olivier Giroud.
Okay.
I mean, I think he's known to be funny, but I can confirm he's a funny bloke.
I have a French wife and my kids are therefore half Irish and half French. So Giroud, they're fond of him. They're fond of him, particularly from the most recent World Cup, the previous World Cup, which France won. They were less enthusiastic about his performances.
Didn't even get a shot on target, did he? But I think generally most of the rugby players and the cricketers I've worked with, they're all pretty funny, down-to-earth people. I think a lot of footballers, they live in their own world. They're paid so much money and have so many sort of hanger-ons and it's not quite the same.
I hear you. So joker is one thing. There's often also people who we run into who we just think have nerves of steel. So who have you met that you think is Mr. or Miss Nerves of Steel?
In the line of work we do, right? Everyone has to try and keep their composure, like most jobs. I definitely, earlier in my career, wasn't quite so good at that. You know, you might have pushy clients, tough negotiations, working for an agency, you're always caught in the middle. I think definitely learned from some of my former managers how to deal with these sort of situations. In terms of talent themselves, I've not really been in a situation where they've really had to show nerves of steel. It would more be just from watching sport, the people that we all see on our TV screens showing that they're unflappable.
Well, that's fair. So challenge to any people listening to the podcast, if you're in Jack's universe, show them that you're the Nerves of Steel winner for the next discussion. And in terms of sports fans, so we all have sports fans in our lives in different ways. And if we work in sport, we're generally fans ourselves. But if you were to single out either in personal, professional, or someone who you've met who you just think is an absolute sports nut, who do you think that might be?
A lot of colleagues are big into their sport, particularly working in sport. But focusing on where I work now, Sidley, our CEO, Stephen, he's got to be up there. He's a massive Man City fan, which is quite excruciating.
He must be very happy at the moment then, yeah?
Yeah. Hence why it's excruciating. Yeah. But he's from up north and has been a fan for a long time. So I'm not accusing him of being a plastic fan. But yeah, we've had some relatively heated debates so far.
Excellent stuff. Right. Well, Stephen's the winner. Okay. And then I guess from a personal perspective, when you were growing up, or now, did you have a sporting hero?
Yeah, Thierry Henry. Loved him.
Oh, God, no, another Frenchman. Just for the record, people, have nothing against French people. I married one, but Thierry Henry with Irish people definitely doesn't have a
big... the handball.
Yeah, the handball, exactly. Anyway.
Yeah, I loved watching him growing up as an Arsenal fan.
No, I mean, phenomenal player. Outside that one instance, absolutely phenomenal player. So, good choice. And best sports event or occasion you think you've been at so far?
Even though both as a fan and through work, I get to go to multiple big occasions. There's not that many like I was there moments, you know, for example, being at Headingley in 2019. But in recent years, I went to, and it wasn't through work, it was just in the ballot, but me and some mates went to England, Germany in the Euro quarterfinals at Wembley. Yeah, that was incredible. Sort of first proper sporting event after all the lockdowns. And then to beat Germany, it was quality. My wife's actually German, so bragging rights in our household.
Oh my God. So yeah, multiple wins there, multiple wins. And of course, something which you can continue to live off for a while. And what's your favorite way to relax?
Pretty basic, but just nice food and drink, to be honest. That's how I like to unwind, eating and drinking.
Yeah, well, that's a very common response. It'd be something which I'm a fan of as well, yeah. Now, given that today is Tuesday, the best thing that's happened so far to you this week might be a stretch, but what has it been?
It's not happened yet, but I'm going to say when Declan Rice is unveiled as an Arsenal player. I hear that's meant to be this week.
At a nice price tag.
Yeah. But
yeah, Trevor, the other co-founder of Sport Endorse, has been an Arsenal fan since I think pre-birth. Yeah, so
sounds like a great man.
He's also, fingers crossed, looking forward to that. And hopes for the rest of 2023? I mean, we're about midway through the year. There's a lot going on.
Work-wise, just looking to further grow our relationships with our Japanese partners and ironing out that corridor between Japan and Europe and how we can make that work better. And then personally, Arsenal winning the league, hopefully. Moving house as well. So yeah, those are my big ones for this year and next year.
There are a few good ones as well. On the Japanese partners thing, from personal experience, I would say it's worth the investment to take the time to have adequately in-depth discussions and to be patient, because when you establish a firm and good partnership with the Japanese entity, it's a lasting one. And clearly you're a man who's managed to be involved with and build some very lasting and successful collaborations. So I would have every confidence that you'll be able to do that this time as well.
Indeed.
All right. Well, look, that pretty much has us wrapped up. So thank you very much, Jack, for joining us on the sit down.
No problem.
For anybody listening, we'll make sure we have Jack's contact details available and you can always reach out to us as well. But as a reminder, he is the director of sponsorship for Sid Lee based in London. So you'll be able to reach him directly as well, I'm sure, if you go to their website.
Thanks, Declan.
Thanks, Jack.
That's all for this episode. Thanks once again to Jack for giving us his time and for sharing his insights. If you've enjoyed listening, give us a like and leave us a comment on the podcast provider of your choice. We do appreciate your support. If you're a brand considering partnering with an athlete or a sports rights holder, do consider the Sport Endorse platform, as it's an excellent solution. If you need top-end support on how to evaluate, measure, and deliver against your sponsorship initiatives, DM us or visit the Sid Lee website and reach out to Jack. Until next time, take care and be relentless.